Welcome to another episode of Conduct Detrimental. I am Dan Luss, and I'm joined by Dan Wallach for our third installment of the St. Louis Rams relocation lawsuit coverage. Dan, I have a feeling that you're excited to talk to our guest today, Ben Fredrickson of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch.
I mean, you bet. I mean, we're on our, third podcast devoted to this topic in the past week. I haven't had a topic or sports law issue, I guess, inspire me the way this case has since maybe the Ezekiel Elliott decision, and I'm discounting all the sports betting stuff. But in terms of a pure NFL topic, this is the one, because we're now really on the precipice of being in a courtroom in St. Louis, Missouri, with the NFL potentially having their feet held to the fire over its relocation policy and maybe going down to the tune of billions of dollars before a St. Louis jury. There's a lot at stake here, not just financially, but the future of how the league and how teams decide on relocation. So this is the case.
As a reminder to our listeners, our podcast is sponsored by Themis Bar Review. Dan, the reason I think you and I have so much fun with this particular topic, this lawsuit, is because, you know, no one's really covering it. And I'm not sure why. We can have our theories, and I know you and I both do, but we're not really hamstrung by anyone. We can cover whatever we want. And we think this is the story that's at the epicenter of sports and law. And that's what we cover. And, you know, Dan, because we are not tied to anybody, we just independently chose Themis Bar Review as our bar review company to the stars. We think they are the greatest bar review company. If you know any kids going to law school or are in law school yourself, Themis Bar Review, top bar prep company.
I'll tell you honestly why we're the only ones covering this besides Mike Florio, because now we're getting into the realm of legal proceedings. And people are listening and seeing the work we're doing around this case. And I think we're being recognized as having put our mark on this issue. And I think people are just listening to our podcasts and following us online. And I think we're doing a nice job with it. And we'll continue to cover this topic through and including the settlement and any appeals. So this hits on all the right cylinders for me as a topic.
Just a preview of Ben Fredrickson at the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Him and his colleague, Joel Currier, have been covering this lawsuit. As Ben explained to us, Ben is kind of covering the opinion side and Joel Currier is kind of covering the beat. So if you want to kind of follow this lawsuit, obviously follow us. I'm at Sports Law Lust, Dan is at Wallach Legal, but follow Joel Currier and STL Today is their handle online. So here's the thing, right? We obviously had Ben Fisher on from the Sports Business Journal. We had Jim Quinn on, who's the attorney handling the Oakland Raiders relocation lawsuit. Our feedback received online, and we mentioned this to Ben. You know, I think people of St. Louis are curious in this lawsuit, but they want one of their own on the podcast. They want someone that was personally there and watching these kind of town hall meetings and explaining how to save the team and how kind of St. Louis was led astray by the NFL. Hey, under these relocation guidelines, you have to have these town hall meetings. You have to talk about these, you know, good faith, diligent efforts that you're making. But we're making them and we still don't have the team. So that's, I think, the element of our coverage that we're missing. And obviously, we're open to any and all suggestions, right? The people that want to hear this lawsuit are the people of St. Louis. But what we're trying to explain to our national audience and our international audience is that if you are a fan of any NFL team, right, for example, the Buffalo Bills or Jacksonville Jaguars, it is very relevant to those markets that these relocation guidelines be put under examination. Are they a contract or are they just not worth the paper that they're drafted on? And that's really the question that we address with Ben, this element of fraud. We talk about antitrust, we talk about contract law, but if you don't have to be a lawyer to understand what we're going to get into in this, this is really the element of divorce, right? As we were kind of nearing the finish line, what the St. Louis and the Rams are doing to try to reconcile this marriage and try to save this. And now has it turned into a situation of scorched earth where St. Louis doesn't even want a team, right? If maybe even expansion is offered, that they don't want it because they just want to go for blood and they want to go kind of straight for the jugular. So we talk kind of like funny money, right, Dan? We're talking about a $10 billion judgment. I know you mentioned on the last podcast that with punitive damage, you could get to $10 billion. So the question, which, you know, we're going to be talking about over the next couple of weeks and months, is if at a certain point we get a $10 billion judgment from a St. Louis jury, you know, what is the conversation the NFL has? Do they just want to say, hey, you know what, we'll take quote unquote pennies on the dollar and we'll give you a new franchise? Or is St. Louis not ready to have any type of settlement? They want $10 billion. They want their blood. Dan, what are your thoughts on this? I know, you know, our last interview with Jim Quinn is sparking a lot of interesting conversation on social media about this relocation controversy.
Well, you know, the notion that there'll be conversations about a settlement, I think, are premature at this point, given how the two sides view the economics around the case. City of St. Louis sees this as a $1 billion and upwards case. The NFL believes that this notion of a disgorgement of the relocation fee and the increased franchise value is just not supportable under the law, and that the only damages the city should get are the out-of-pocket expenditures and maybe some revenue streams that were lost. And that places the value of the case in the NFL's perspective at somewhere between $50 to $150 million. So they're in two different universes in terms of monetary damages. So I think this one's going to be an 11th, hour type of settlement if it happens at all, because of the prospect of the NFL going under examination in front of a hostile and truly a hostile St. Louis jury, with the prospect of having the kitchen sink thrown at it during a time when the NFL's focus is going to be on the Super Bowl. And how delicious would it be to have Jerry Jones and Roger Goodell being involved in trial proceedings that bleed over into Super Bowl week? I don't see that happening realistically, but I'm not sure how you bridge the gap without some type of non-monetary promise, like the lure or promise of a future franchise, if and when the NFL expands within a finite time period. But what is also appealing about this case, besides what it could mean for St. Louis, is that, if this could happen to St. Louis and it could happen to Oakland, it could also happen to Minnesota, Jacksonville, Buffalo, yes, and even Chicago, although I don't think the Bears are leaving Illinois. But this is a case that has what I think are potentially far-reaching consequences over whether these guidelines are meaningful and can be weaponized by municipalities and stadium authorities to hold the NFL's feet to the fire and bring these lawsuits against the NFL under the theory that these relocation guidelines have to be adhered to, that they're not just simply pliable to fit the NFL's, whims and desires.
On that note, I think we've said enough. Let's turn it over to the expert, the St. Louis expert, Ben Fredrickson of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Ben, welcome to Conduct Detrimental. How are you?
Doing well, guys. Thanks for having me. And thanks for talking about this, man. It's been cool to see the reaction. I know that you guys are probably hearing from a lot of people who are pleased that you're diving into this topic. So happy to help in any way I can and eager to talk about it.
It's fun. From our vantage point, Dan and I both grew up in New York. Dan is now out of the country. He's representing the country of Russia, which is not a running joke. Dan is actually in Russia. But, we kept hearing kind of this groundswell of this lawsuit. And I think in our sports law circles, people were talking about it. But there was an understanding, hey, the Oakland Raiders lawsuit got, dismissed and it's barely hanging on by a thread at the appellate level. Maybe this case is going to go away. So when this thing really started picking up steam for us was when it survived on all fronts, the summary judgment motion. And that, for our non-legal listeners, that was the NFL's kind of last ditch effort to kick this thing out of court, no trial, they don't have to mess around with settlement. And they threw the kitchen sink and, the judge essentially responded, no, I'm not throwing out any portion of this lawsuit. So people could complain that it's maybe a St. Louis judge making a decision that benefits St. Louis. But, that's the reality that we're here, that this case is now fast-tracked towards being placed in front of a St. Louis jury. So you don't have to be from St. Louis to understand the significance of this. A $1 billion lawsuit might be decided by a St. Louis judge and a St. Louis jury certainly has ramifications across the NFL. Ben, this is part three, as you know, of our coverage of this lawsuit. What we wanted to have you on, we obviously had the incredible reaction to our coverage of this. And people pointed out, and Ben, I'm happy to toot your own horn. They said, Ben is a guy that's been following this. He's got some great commentary on this lawsuit. You should bring him on to talk about the history of how this lawsuit came to be. And maybe this arbitration that occurred in 2013, and how we went from the greatest show on turf to no more Rams. And that's essentially where we are. So Ben, I'll give you the floor. Give me your overall thoughts on where we are today. And then, we'll talk about how we got there.
What I've observed is kind of an awakening to what you just said. Like, this is a big deal. I remember writing a column back when the lawsuit initially came out, and there were basically a flurry of lawsuits that were filed against the Rams. One was about, season ticket holders and people who had bought personal seat license. One was about the facility they used to practice in. Then there was this big one, and that's the one we're talking about, which still is ongoing. And the typical things happen and predictable things, like, how can you fight the league? They can do whatever they want. This is a frivolous attempt. And it kind of just got ignored. And I remember writing a column saying, look, I'm not a legal expert here, but I do think that this should be pursued, because unless someone ever stands up to the NFL about this kind of shell game of relocation that is being run, then it's just going to keep happening. And when someone wrongs you, and everyone who's followed this story knows that the lies were outright and often, And they said one thing and did the other, and they should pursue it. Now, I don't know where it will end, but I think it's an honorable effort. And that kind of fell on some deaf ears for some, but here it is. And as you guys laid it out, it's either going to get settled now or it's going to go to trial. Of course, a trial and whatever a jury decides might not be the end of it. We know the NFL loves to appeal, as we've seen in this case. But I do think that it's now real. And I think I've seen more people kind of paying attention to that. I think the league is probably, it's been on their radar more than they've let on, but now it's very much on their radar. And the timing is fascinating because it's timing up with the Super Bowl, which will be hosted in SoFi Stadium, where this at the same time this trial is supposed to be happening. So the lawyers who are representing St. Louis, the county, the Dome Authority, I think they were very specific in what they pursued here. They didn't make it an antitrust case, which is, as you guys know, is incredibly sticky and hard, thorny. Basically, any region that's pursued those has been unlucky against teams that move. They broke it down to this is what Missouri law says. And here are the times where we can prove it was broken. So far, they have done that. And so far, they haven't really had any setbacks. You know, the NFL tried to steer this into arbitration, arguing that it was a byproduct of the lease agreement and the fallout from that, which required arbitration to settle beef. And the judge said, no, this is a separate issue. And he's continued to rule on that. They've tried to block the pursuit of financial information for potential punitive damages. The judge said, no, they've appealed it. That got turned down. Everything that they've tried to shave off a piece of it or minimize it or squash it hasn't worked. It is real. And I think it's going to be headed to a very big trial that has a lot of ramifications for the league, not just for St. Louis, but how it handles relocation entirely.
You've described somewhat of the emotional tenor of the residents of the city, city officials, and this is not like a typical case for money damages. There's really an emotional component to it, wanting to get your pound of flesh. Given that kind of a backdrop and that kind of mental state, do you think the city officials and the stadium authority and the county are incentivized to try to settle the case for monetary damages? Or do they want to get Stan Kroenke and the other owners and team executives, the commissioner, whoever they want, whoever's named in the suit, do they want to get those individuals under oath, put them under direct examination, and have the public learn once and for all the extent of the lies?
Well, I think the lawyers have been pretty calculated here. I don't think they're working off of emotion. I think they feel they've got a good case. So a settlement, if it comes, it would be about obviously the magic number. And that's mostly why I think it will go to trial, not because they're determined to get these guys on the stand, but because I don't think they're going to agree with the amount of money to make a trial not happen. I mean, this lawsuit is pursuing, you guys have run the numbers, it's billions, you know, billions with a B and an S on the end. If the NFL could have cut a check to say, hey, we'll give you the $18 million you said you spent trying to keep the team, then I think this probably very well could have been over by now. But that's not what they're coming for. They're coming for everything from, you know, the expansion fee to the, you know, lost hotel taxes in St. Louis County. I mean, they've got it all kind of mapped out. So I know that the scenery, the imagery of Kroenke and Goodell and Jerry Jones on the stand in St. Louis in January is really fun. But here's the thing. They've already deposed these guys. They've already interviewed them under oath. They've got video of it. And I don't know, you know, this idea that they're going to come back and say something different on the stand in a trial, I think they've got what they wanted. You know, they've got Jerry Jones under oath in the deposition saying he doesn't give a damn about the relocation guidelines, that he never read them. He never had anybody read them to him. I mean, he said these things under oath. And thank God, one of the few people who tells the truth is Jerry Jones. He doesn't care. And he didn't care about the relocation guidelines that they ran roughshod over to move the team.
Aren't they under seal? You've read these transcripts?
So this is like the protective order of the case, where the Rams and the NFL fought tooth and nail to have this protective order, which is supposed to put like the cone of silence over. Yet the NFL and the Rams side keeps filing documents in court and they keep getting out. They either don't file them right or there's a glitch. I mean, when they filed their appeal to the Missouri Supreme Court, to have they're continuing to fight this handing over of financial documents for potential punitive damages. So you guys know this better than I do. I'm not a lawyer and don't pretend one. Didn't even stay at a Holiday Inn Express last night. But the way Missouri law works is you can basically get a mock-up of someone's finances before you build your case for punitive damages. Like, so you don't sue a guy who's worth 10 bucks for 20 million, right? Well, it's a huge deal in this case because we're talking about most of the owners on the expansion committee, the LA committee, and they're all billionaires, some of the richest people in America. And they don't want to hand over their tax documents and all of their businesses and their subsidies. And it's huge. It's a huge fight. Well, when the NFL Rams side appeals that to the Supreme Court, Missouri Supreme Court, they include exhibits. And half of them, you know, have briefs and arguments that were supposed to be, I guess, could have been under the protective order, and they're not. They're publicly available. So one of those exhibits over the course of these documents, including the biggest drop, was actually the Rams' request for summary judgment for a group that wants everything to be under order. They wanted to have that hearing, which is a public hearing. Some of these things have come out in the hearings in St. Louis. So, you know, those are open to the public. So if they reference what was found in discovery, then you hear it. But some of the documents that have been filed have been left open to the public, including, you know, a snippet of Jerry Jones under oath saying he doesn't care about the relocation guidelines. So some of it's out, but I don't think they're looking for a smoking gun in the trial. They have what they need, and they've done the depositions with Kroenke, with Goodell, with Jerry Jones, with Eric Grubman, who was hard for them to track down. They've done a lot of these already.
Ben, we've talked on the first part of our coverage, kind of like the breach of contract fraud element. Our last podcast, the most recent one, was about kind of the antitrust element, obviously some of the overlapping breach of contract. I think why we had you on, Ben, and you kind of are a perfect guest for this, because obviously, as you mentioned to us, you went to school in Missouri. You, I guess, grew up as a fan of the team, all the way from the Kurt Warner Rams, the Mark Bulger Rams, and maybe the lesser known Nick Foles era of the Rams.
I got to watch the good Rams. I got to cover the bad Rams.
Ah, yeah, that worked. Oh, listen, you got to experience all sides. So this element is kind of right. I mean, obviously, we're still talking about the same case. I kind of want to get into the divorce element of the St. Louis and the Rams. And that's really this messy saga that starts, I think, as far back as 2005, when the stadium was supposed to be fixed up. That was at a time when Mark Bulger was in the middle of his tenure as quarterback of the St. Louis Rams. So brief background, and then Ben, I know you know this far better than I do with your coverage, but accordingly, under this lease, there was a provision that required St. Louis to make modifications to the then Edward Jones Dome in 2005. The then owner, prior to Stan Kroenke, George Frontier, waived this provision in exchange for cash that served as a penalty for the city's noncompliance. So in subsequent years, ownership, once there was a change in ownership, essentially said, hey, we're not going to waive this anymore. You actually have to fix the stadium. And the Rams made a series of adjustments, and they wanted to fix the lighting and maybe the sound quality. There's a number of minute changes. And according to this lease, the quality of the stadium had to make sure it was within the top 25% of all stadiums in the NFL. I'm going to kick it to you. This is where kind of sports and law collide. This was actually taken to an arbitration in February of 2013. I know the result of it, but Ben, can you kind of walk us up there in details of the lease that I'm missing and maybe efforts that St. Louis made to kind of comply prior to this arbitration?
You're referencing the dreaded first tier clause, and that's what happens when you're trying to get a team and you agree to things that you should know in hindsight were terrible things to agree to. That was a bad lease, and St. Louis was very excited about getting a team, and it agreed to it, and it didn't age well. One of the reasons it didn't age well is because George was no longer the majority owner. Stan Kroenke was, and Stan Kroenke knew that first tier lease clause was there. So there were reasons that, you know, you can go back and some of before Stan Kroenke stopped talking in general about this team and his plans for it. This is before the relocation. He's been very chatty since getting in LA. You know, he had these comments about how he's from Missouri. Missourians know him. And those comments were made off the basis of a fear that maybe he might look to move the team through by way of the first tier lease clause. Now, as it relates to the lease, it was in the lease. St. Louis signed up for it. They took it to arbitration. They didn't want to make the upgrades and they lost. And that opened the window for the Rams to be year to year in St. Louis. And it did, you know, it put everybody on alert that the Rams could be, you know, looking to leave based off of this year-to-year lease. Everybody knows, it's common knowledge that the best way to keep your team without a doubt is to have a lease and have it. And that's the agreement. However, this lawsuit has done a pretty impressive job, I think, of really dividing those two things. And you see this constantly in these briefs that they're arguing back and forth and in the hearings in St. Louis. The NFL wants this story to be exactly what you mentioned, Dan. They won the lease fight, and now that freed up their right to leave. But this lawsuit is saying the lease has nothing to do with it. The Rams were year to year at the stadium, and the NFL was saying, go create a chance to keep your team with a new stadium. We want to keep teams in their host cities. Here are our relocation guidelines. Here are all the times they talk about, you know, having this work in a host city. You know, if you do more than these other regions that are trying to keep their teams, then things are going to work out well for you. And that's coming from members of the Los Angeles Expansion Committee. It's coming from Roger Goodell. It's coming from Eric Grubman time and time again. We are a league of rules. You know, all of these comments that are now coming out in this lawsuit, some publicly, some behind the scenes. And that's really what the lawsuit is dividing up. The NFL says this starts we got the right to leave as soon as we won the lease debate. And this lawsuit is saying those are separate issues. This was a relocation guideline breach. It's a contract. They broke it in the discussion about what happened after that.
Chronologically, right? I think we can all agree, right, that there was a period of time where St. Louis was on notice of a potential move. And the arbitrator, the three-panel arbitration panel on February 1st, 2013, ruled actually in favor of the Rams and said that the Edward Jones Dome was not in the top 25% of all venues. And, you know, to kind of add insult to injury, the Rams were actually awarded attorney's fees, which were worth a couple million associated with that arbitration. So, you know, I want to get Ben to this period, and you mentioned it. Following this arbitration panel, we're at a point where we're going year to year. And it's no secret that the Rams are, you know, out of town by 2016, 2017. So 3 years from this point, the Rams are now no longer in St. Louis. So this is Ben, and you kind of laid it up. In this period of time from 2013 to 2016, there are people from, you know, the Rams organization, from the NFL, either on the record or off the record, saying, hey, jump through X amount of hoops, do X, and you can save the team. The one thing that we didn't talk about on our prior podcast, and I want to make sure we hit this, and then we can get into the lawsuit. The National Car Rental Field proposal is this $1.1 billion proposed field. Last episode, Jim Quinn, who's the attorney at the center of the Oakland Raiders lawsuit, said at some point, Oakland came up with their own version, a billion-dollar proposed stadium to save. And similarly, the franchise just kind of swatted it away. What is your understanding of how the Rams dealt with this proposal, which was going to be a state-of-the-art billion-dollar facility?
I've said this before, and I don't know that this might tick some people in St. Louis off, but that's okay because it's what I believe. I think when the Rams won that arbitration hearing, which is what, you know, we just spent a little bit of time talking about, if the Rams would have come out and said without interference from the league, and it would have been a similar comment between the two entities that, hey, the Rams won this arbitration case. They are now free and clear to move if they choose to. There's nothing St. Louis is going to be able to do to stop that. And if it wants to change that, the time for it is done. So be on notice, you know, that your team could be moving and there's nothing you can do to stop it if that happens. And if they would have said that, it would have made a bunch of people mad, but I do think that if they would have said that, there's no way that we're talking about any of this lawsuit today. That is, to me, where this whole thing really starts. That's not what happened. What happened was it became, okay, there's now in motion, the Rams are actively trying to move. And that's Kroenke's mission. I mean, Kroenke registered the Rams as a Los Angeles company in 2010. Of course, they had previously been in Los Angeles, but this was something that came out in the discovery during this trial. So the Rams are ramping up these efforts to try to, you know, behind the scenes get what they want, but it's not what the NFL is saying. And it's not what key people in the NFL are saying. So what that led to was the creation of the task force. Jay Nixon gets Dave Peacock and they decide, okay, they're going to make an attempt. The league is saying, go keep your team and come up with a plan. It has to be in a new stadium and go get it. And that's what happened. My personal belief is the league kind of said, hey, we're trying to move these teams. They say they want to move one team to L.A. They end up moving three teams. They moved a third. They moved all of them. So I think what happened was they gave St. Louis kind of a fool's errand, and St. Louis got further than they thought, and they started making progress. They got a sponsor, and all of a sudden this proposal looked like something that could happen. And one of the things that's going to come up, they were told from the owners, told, hey, you can get this money for this G4 funding, this league loan. And then all of a sudden, that wasn't available. And the day after they made their pitch to the alderman about this is what the stadium here could look like, then all of a sudden the NFL comes out swinging about the request for the money for the loan. So you kind of started seeing it get nicked and nicked as it got closer to the finish line. So there was a valid attempt to come up with a plan to keep the team. And compared to what the other regions did, not to knock those, if you simply said, okay, who put the best plan to try to keep a team, then St. Louis would not have been one losing the team. And in that effort for the Riverfront Stadium, you have these comments from Eric Grubman, the league official who shows up at the hearings in St. Louis, talking about how it's a league of rules and the relocation guidelines mention the word obligation multiple times, obligation to host cities and their desire to keep teams in their host cities, if at all possible, a requirement to negotiate in good faith during the effort to do so, which the Rams can say they negotiated, but in good faith, it's going to be hard to prove because at the same time where there's this effort to get this stadium, right? You've got things happening like Kevin Demoff forwarding negative articles about St. Louis to league officials, articles trashing the the city. You've got this really appalling timeline of what they're saying, the league, Roger Goodell, even Eric Grubman, versus what those actually happened. And that's going to be the timeline there is they were told, hey, come up with a plan to keep the team. You've still got a shot. And meanwhile, there was no shot based off of what we know now. And they're going to say, well, and they've already argued this. They said, well, you knew you had no chance to keep the team. So therefore, saying now that the efforts you made, that's on you. You made those efforts. Well, no, they were being told. Now, they weren't being told by Stan Kroenke that he was staying, but Stan Kroenke wasn't in control of if he left or not. The league was, and Roger Goodell and the owners were. The Committee on Los Angeles Expansion was. Remember, guys, the Committee for Los Angeles Expansion did not recommend the Rams to move. And the owners, when they voted the first two times, did not approve the Rams to move. It was after that, when they closed the doors, made the secret ballots, you know, Jerry Jones went around and twisted people's arms and then immediately signed a massive contract with his company with SoFi Stadium. Once they got approval to move, shocker, if we're trying to improve what he got out of the deal, that's what happened. So I do think that it was a combination of the league said, hey, give St. Louis a ball to play with so we can, you know, hedge our bets. And St. Louis got closer to the goal line than they thought they would. And then that created a problem.
What was the difficulty going back to the arbitration award of, okay, there were two competing, I guess, two submissions as to what amount of outlay it would take to make the Dome a first class or first tier facility. I think the city convention authority, tourism authority proposed $125 million of upgrades. The Rams said, well, no, it's going to take $700 million. Okay, so why did the city come in at such a low ball number given how, you know, I guess antiquated the Dome was and how much was needed to make it a first class facility and how doable would it have been to find a way to pay for the $700 million worth of upgrades? In retrospect, it seems like not a lot of money when it comes to stadium construction. Maybe in 2013, there was a different scale back then on what it would take to construct a first-class facility. Today, it doesn't seem at a scale to me.
It would still be a lot of money for, you know, St. Louis to simply approve for taxpayer money. It just, you know, because of for stadium upgrades for a football team. And it, you're right. You're totally right. They were on the hook for that. I mean, that was the lease that they agreed. And that's how the arbitrators settled it. But it didn't even get really off the ground. It was pretty much a non-starter. And part of that, I think, too, can be pointed to the relationship that was already existing between the Rams ownership and some of the city officials. This was not a hunky-dory relationship here between the Rams and the Dome Authority and the city officials at that point, in large part due to Kroenke, and also the fact that the lease was always, I think, viewed as something that was just going to be worked out. I think the first tier clause, when the Rams came, everybody's happy. I mean, it's kind of like you get married, right? And you don't expect to drop the divorce papers on your honeymoon. You think things are just going to work out and you hope everybody's going to want to be together. And you might hope that, oh, well, there's some upgrades needed and they got that clause. So let's find a compromise. I don't think it was agreed to as, okay, this is going to be met to the letter of the exact requirements. And that was a mistake on St. Louis's side. And it was very clear that by that point that the Rams were going to demand that and hold it to an exact and use it as leverage if they didn't get exactly what they wanted.
Well, let's talk about the timing of the arbitration. On the one hand, it's 2013, but there was another significant event taking place in 2013. Stan Kroenke, while he's arbitrating the issue of upgrades to the stadium, he's scouting parcels of land in Inglewood, California, that aren't a total surprise to him as far as the location and the specific parcel. He's married to an heiress of the Walmart fortune, and this location in Inglewood, California, was intended to be a Walmart supercenter. So presumably, it had been on his radar going way back prior to 2013. Can you talk about where this fits into the timeline when we're discussing the fraud and the issue of good faith or lack of good faith?
That's one of the key kind of pillars that's going to be pointed to here when it comes to the deceit and the fraud and the lying. That's going to be the easiest thing to prove. You know, contract law and what constitutes a contract and trying to hold the NFL accountable for breaking what are technically in its eyes internal guidelines, those are probably hard, but it's easy to point to all of the lies. And one of the big lies was how the purchase of the Los Angeles Stadium site was handled. It's galling how just kind of defiant the Rams have been in admitting their lies about that. There's now a track record of internal and external conversations about how that was handled. Kroenke and Dimoff admit to the Los Angeles Times in an interview shortly after the move was approved that Kroenke calls up Dimoff the day that he saw that land and said, this is a beautiful, I'm paraphrasing. I don't have the transcript in front of me. You know, this is a great site for a football stadium. This is great. And then you've got Demoff saying at the same time, you look back in time and Demoff at the same time is saying, this is not for a football stadium. This is a real estate. You've got Demoff in the lead and the Rams sending talking points to Roger Goodell for his Super Bowl press conference about what he should say about Stan's purchase of the land and how to kind of talk around it and him agreeing and saying exactly that. And you've got Demoff saying things like Stan Kroenke's interested in parcels all over the world and, you know, downplaying the idea that this could be used for a stadium. There's the track record of that goes on and on and on. And it's going to be a very glaring example of how this was working behind the scenes for a very long time. And how can it be two things? How can it be negotiating good faith while also pursuing this other opportunity? Not that the guidelines say other opportunities can't be pursued, but they can't be lied about, you know, publicly and internally within the league time and time again. And they were.
Yeah, Demoff seems to be the real villain in many ways.
Kevin Demoff, yeah, I mean, he's the punching bag here. I mean, Kevin Demoff, if you guys don't know, he's the one who has appeared on St. Louis, a news station with the bar underneath. That's supposed to identify your title where it just says professional liar. You know,
professional liar.
The guy who did it is a friend of mine, Charlie Marlowe. And, you know, look, I don't think his station loved it, but also like no one could say it wasn't true because there's now this just glaring track record of things Demoff has said and done that look horrendous. Why he talked so much, I don't know. These things are going to be direct comments used. I mean, he said, you've got the quote on a radio interview with Tim McKernan, there is no secret plan. You know, there absolutely was a secret plan. This is all very clear now. Things downplaying the stadium site, things hoping that, you know, the Rams will be there for years to come. Meanwhile, when other things are very clearly going on, circulating the letter that the team was thinking about putting out when it got its approval to move and referring it internally as the adios motherfuckers letter, you know, just things that are both unprofessional, but also unethical. And I think if you're trying to prove fraud, as he was the talking point for the team, remember, Kroenke ghosted. Kroenke was smart enough to stop talking. Around here, he was referred to as Silent Stan. But it was Demoff who continued to talk and continued to talk himself into being mentioned in this fraud idea element time and time again.
I understand that there's some, at times, puffery or embellishment, but he's going to these season ticket holder events, fan forums, and saying, and I'm quoting literally from the complaint, that there's a 1 in a million chance the Rams would move. It's not a piece of land that's any good for a football team. The size and the shape aren't good for a football stadium. These are separate statements. This is not just, you know, one mistake that he might have made on a radio station. This is sort of like a bold-faced lie at the time when he knew better. And he says this to fans and season ticket holders, which does, in my view, kind of pour salt on the wound because it's treating the public almost as if they're rubes. And I understand the debate that you might have on a dais at a city commission meeting. Okay, that's one thing. But to go into a fan forum and treat the fans as if they're like not on your level and say those kinds of things to them as if they're morons.
It's one thing to say, hey, we'll see how it works out. We hope for the best. It's another thing to aggressively lie time and time again, where there's a direct track record of proving those lies, that they're inaccurate. And he was the spokesperson for the team because the owner was not talking at that time. So yeah, I think that's a pretty big deal. The other thing that jumps out is the conversation that he had at his high school where he, you know, talked about how the Rams not playing well helped the effort on the field. And Stan Kroenke, you know, would spend money on the team. So it was hard to prove it. But there's long been a theory that the lack of winning on the field was in some ways helpful to the team in its ability to relocate, because then it could complain about fans. It could complain about attendance. I mean, look at the attendance numbers when the Rams were winning during those Kurt Warner years. There was no problem with it being a baseball town then. You know, look at Jeff Fisher, who has said multiple times when he was hired, he was asked about relocating a team, that a lot of the questions he received in his interview were about how he relocated a team in the past. I mean, these things are pretty, you stack them all up and you read them. And I think it's going to be pretty interesting for a jury.
This is where, you know, you kind of read my mind. I wanted to get you to Jeff Fisher. So people that are coming new to this, that have not been following this lawsuit, I put it up online, you know, that Jeff Fisher reportedly knew in 2012 that the Rams were moving to LA. And those in the know of St. Louis said this is old news. But for the rest of the you know, every other market. This is a big development, right? Maybe people are in the weeds, like, okay, maybe he's buying a plot of land for Walmart. These billionaires could be buying huge plots of land. Who knows? But I think it's pretty relevant. And sports fans can understand this. If the coach is being interviewed, I mean, we talked about this a little bit on the last podcast, right? Jeff Fisher is synonymous with the Tennessee Titans back in the day. Now maybe he's known as Mr. 7-9, but, you know, that dilutes his legacy a little bit. But he was asked about, at least according to him, the trials and tribulations of moving a team to a new market. And maybe that was part of the reason he was interviewed in the first place. But that's not just like reports. That's Fisher telling people, hey, yeah, there was a conversation about moving the team to LA. Now, I haven't seen the witness list in this case, and maybe Dan knows better than I do. I imagine Fisher, his testimony would be relevant. I'm not sure if he's actually going to testify at the trial of this case. But that's what sports fans can put their teeth into, right? You don't have to be an expert economist or a lawyer or covering this, you know, day in and day out. If you're interviewed for a job and you said, hey, by the way, you know, we might be moving to LA, that's a pretty relevant statement. Now, is it the be all end all? Not necessarily. But as you point out, you start piecing these different things together and it paints a very different picture. So this is kind of to your earlier point, and we've kind of spoke to all of our guests about this. These NFL relocation guidelines, right? They are, in one sense, incredibly relevant to what we're talking about here. And then if you listen to the NFL, and this is why Jerry Jones thinks he can get away with what he's saying, and maybe he can, right? I mean, you know, we're not here to play judge, jury, and executioner. We're here to just kind of analyze this. Jerry Jones is essentially saying, hey, you know, taking what you said, right? Jerry Jones is saying, it doesn't really matter. I didn't read the relocation guidelines. It doesn't matter. The NFL's argument, which we saw in their summary judgment motion, is that these relocation guidelines were not a contract. They were guidance, and they did not have to listen to them. It did not create a sufficient contractual relationship that they were bound to follow. So from a legal perspective, who would that contract be between? It would be between the owners and really themselves, right? That they had to follow a proper protocol. Now, St. Louis is not a party to that contract, but the theory that you would get in under is this thing called a third-party beneficiary. And if you read 4.3 of the NFL relocation policy, it doesn't mention St. Louis. It certainly doesn't mention Oakland. It certainly doesn't mention San Diego or any other potential states and cities. What it does mention, however, is these local markets, these home territories. My question to you, Ben, I mean, I wasn't living in St. Louis at the time of 2016. And part of this for the legal sense, right, you have to show that these third-party beneficiaries, you know, maybe were aware of this, maybe reasonably relied on it, but it was intended to benefit them. That they were, you know, essentially aware of it, that they, you know, maybe put this in place. So, Ben, I'll kind of give it to you. I don't know the answer to this question. Back in 2016, were these relocation guidelines, were they a topic of conversation? You know, is that something that was out there that Rams fans in the city of St. Louis knew that, hey, this thing's out here to protect us?
Well, they thought it was, yeah. That's how it was presented by, at the time, Eric Grubman was kind of the face of the relocation issue. And he came to town for a town, they had to have these town hall hearings. And that was in the relocation guidelines. You got to give a region a chance to speak up. And people lined up to say all the reasons the Rams should stay. It was very, very emotional for folks here. And it was painful, you know, because I think a lot of people feared that they were going to lose their team and they thought that there would be a chance to sway opinion. Yeah, my joke about the relocation guidelines is at the time during the saga, they were presented as if they're Moses coming down from the mountain with the Ten Commandments. Like you'd think they were chiseled in stone of these things have to happen and they're very detailed. And of course, the host cities are viewed as a third party beneficiary, because how do you have a relocation guideline if you don't have an agreement with the place you're relocating from or relocating to? Without a city, you don't have relocation guidelines. You're just floating all over the map. But yeah, they were presented as this is what has to happen for a team to move. And the region that puts forth a convincing effort to keep its team will have a very good chance of doing so. And I get it. If you're just hearing about this for the first time, you're going, so let me get this straight. Stan Kroenke became the majority owner of the team. He very clearly on gave the impression that he was willing and interested in perhaps moving, and he did it. And he won the arbitration case. So really, what's the point? And how could he not move the team? And what's going to stop him? The NFL was the one saying, we have these rules. I mean, the line from Eric Grubman, we are a league of rules. The emphasis from Roger Goodell that the relocation guidelines had to, you know, be followed in order to move the teams. The influence from the owners that were working on St. Louis's behalf and helping the St. Louis effort to keep its team were stressing the importance of this. And then this acknowledgement from even owners. Jerry Richardson at one point sent an email to some of the folks he was working with that said, look, the effort to get Kroenke to move is prioritizing the money, getting the last dime out of it, and totally ignoring the relocation guidelines and what they require. And also Grubman is working his devious ways to try to get the LA thing to work. The guy who was supposed to be kind of the impartial lead on the relocation front. I mean, when owners themselves are saying, well, we've got these guidelines and we're kind of just ignoring them, it tells you that, yeah, they broke those guidelines and they were presented here in St. Louis as something that were very important. Now it's ironic because the lawyers stand up in court. I mean, they might as well be written on the back of a wet napkin at a bar. I mean, they don't matter. You know, we can do what we want. These guidelines mean nothing to the league, let alone somebody who's not the league. But I can tell you very much that that's another reason I think this case is fascinating as I try to take off my St. Louis glasses. If they settle this thing, say they give St. Louis $1 billion, make it go away, or 500 million, I'm just saying, pick a number. If they settle it, then every other city that gets a team taken away from it, Buffalo, whoever comes next, when they want to put a team on the Mars or the moon, whatever, Mexico City, Europe, they're going to say, wait a second, you guys have kind of agreed in that settlement in St. Louis that you do think those relocation guidelines mean something. And you do think that you broke them in some way because you settled the case. So I don't think the NFL wants to give up that corner. I think they want to defend their idea that these relocation guidelines don't mean anything. And if they take that to trial and lose, I think that becomes really interesting too. That's part of the reason this case is really big. It's not just St. Louis got scorned. It's that nothing has ever told them these relocation guidelines actually have to mean something. And that's why they're trying to point to the thing in Oakland, because it was an antitrust issue and it didn't work, but it's also being appealed, as I'm sure you guys talked about. It's not settled.
Right.
The NFL lawyers tried to base their argument on that unsettled case. And the judge here in Missouri said, first of all, this isn't finalized. Second of all, I don't agree with
it. Ben, I think the ship has sailed on the notion of protecting this high ideal that the relocation guidelines don't mean anything, because even if a jury reaches a pro NFL verdict or not the greatest verdict for the city of St. Louis, you have that summary judgment ruling that is already precedent. I mean, it's not an appellate court decision. It's not from the Missouri Supreme Court, but you have a decision that is not, you know, reversed yet, that stands for the proposition that the NFL relocation guidelines constitute a contract and that the city of St. Louis, County of St. Louis, and the Stadium Authority are third party beneficiaries of that agreement. So if this case were to go to trial with a settlement, or it ends up in a verdict or a settlement, that decision is still on the books. The city of Oakland is still pursuing an appeal on that adverse decision as to whether the relocation guidelines constitute a contract. So I don't know that the NFL can erase what has already happened in terms of case law, unless they're willing to roll the dice, take this to trial, lose, then take an appeal and hope that the Missouri Court of Appeals reverses on that point. And there are so many factual issues bundled up into whether this was a contract and whether, you know, from the surrounding circumstances, it was intended to benefit directly the city of St. Louis. Some of these are mixed questions of law and fact that the jury already would have ruled upon and made specific findings. I'm not sure that an appellate court will reverse those components of a jury verdict when they're mixed questions of fact and law. So I think that precedent already exists. And if the NFL is going to stand on the principle that our relocation guidelines are this, whatever we want them to be, I think they've already lost that battle.
Well, I think that's going to have to change the scope of how they do relocation if that's the case. And that should be what hopefully comes from this issue too. I mean, I'd love to see St. Louis get a bunch of money. I know folks wanted there to be a team or an expansion team. I don't have no reason to believe that that's a possibility. We'll see.
Why isn't that a possibility? St. Louis has had two NFL teams over the past, you know, 50 years, you know, the Cards, the Rams. Now they're fighting to keep their team or to sue over the team. The engagement that we're getting online and through the podcast and through Twitter, I mean, compared to what I hear out of Oakland, which is relatively quiet compared to the outrage in St. Louis, it shows to me that there's more than adequate fan support for an NFL franchise. Why can't
there's no doubt about that. NFL,
why is it implausible that the city would get a new franchise?
I don't think the NFL wants to be here, and I don't think the city and the NFL would get to that point where they see that being a compromise. I think the NFL views things as, where can they make the most money long term? And I think they've decided that they feel they want to be in places that maximize that, even if it means taking losses. There's also a lot of bitterness between these two sides. And a lot of people are, this is not like one of those hearings where you go to, you guys have been there, where like the lawyers do their job and then they go out for lunch afterwards. I mean, there's bitterness here. And it's really the city and the county that would have to decide what the settlement would look like. But I just have not heard any sort of whispers of an expansion team being a real possibility. Now, maybe it comes out of the blue, and I'm not pretending to be you know, as in the know as some people. But I think the thing that jumps out most importantly is that there's so many unanswered questions. Where would it play? Who would be the owner? Where would it practice? You know, all of those things are unanswered. There's not a potential owner standing by, and those questions would have to be sorted out. So I really do think it's a financial fight more than a team fight. And I think that it probably goes to trial. And I don't think that the NFL will like how that trial goes. Now, what happens on what will probably be an immediate appeal, I don't know. But this idea that they're afraid to let it get to trial, or that they feel like they have to settle, I don't know that I buy that. I do think they are afraid of how this could impact their relocation in the future. Outside of St. Louis, I think that's the bigger issue here. And if that's the legacy, where St. Louis gets a lot of money, but also stops the NFL from running this relocation rip job on other places, then I think that's worth the effort. And now I'll get crushed by St. Louis fans for not making a passionate case for an expansion team. No, and that's okay. They know how I feel. I'm of the mindset that if someone treats you like trash, you don't go back and get in a relationship with them. That's just me. I'm stubborn and I hold grudges, and that's okay. There are many fans in St. Louis that would not do that. They would be there to support whatever team and whatever owner wanted to be here. Guys, I could take up another hour giving you guys examples of all the reasons that an NFL team should be dying to be here. Look at the attendance for the Cardinals. Look at the attendance for the Blues. These fans have set records for NHL fan events during the All-Star game. They just blew out and set an attendance record at a PGA Seniors, you know, championship tour event. It's the 50-plus crowd, and we're crushing records. I mean, this sports town goes nuts for people that want to be here and want to win. And it's a bad example to hold up Kroenke's last Rams teams because he didn't want to be here and it was obvious and he didn't care about the city. And he also trashed it on the way out the door, which was just a low blow. And that does speak to that angry divorce element that's going on here.
So Ben, we're not in the business of saying something that we don't think is going to occur. And Dan's funny. Dan's been pointing this out online. We had Jim Quinn on our last episode, which if you haven't listened to, we highly recommend you checking out. He's talking about, again, the analogies and the comparisons between the Oakland lawsuit and this lawsuit. But what he said was, from a practical perspective, you know, he's basically, you know, you can view him as almost akin to the lawyers on behalf of the city of St. Louis. What he's essentially saying, and take it with a grain of salt, right? Why is he saying it? Because it might benefit his case. It might benefit potential settlement. But, you know, as we pointed out, there's a scenario, a realistic scenario, where if you bring this case in front of a St. Louis jury, they are in a situation, right? I don't know how you're going to find someone that's impartial to sit on this jury. I don't really know how that's possible. Me personally, people can get mad at me. I don't really think it was that fair that this case is going to be tried in the city of St. Louis. I don't really think the NFL is necessarily scared of a trial. They seem to like to fight these things. But here's the part which doesn't really make sense to me. If the case goes to trial and St. Louis gets a significant damages award, let's say close to $10 billion, what Jim Quinn points out in our last show is, hey, the NFL is not going to write a check for $10 billion. They would much rather write a check for a smaller amount with the promise that we'll give you some type of an NFL team. We'll give it to the city. I don't know who the owner is going to be, but we will expand, just like the NBA is talking about potentially moving back to Seattle, moving into Las Vegas. And we're going to open up that conversation. When we have it, we will give you guys a team. You will be the first ones to get a team. Now, is that such a far-fetched conversation? Maybe, maybe not, because in the history of the NFL, in the recent world of expansion, the 32nd NFL franchise was the Houston Texans, which was the Houston Oilers. Once upon a time, they lost them. And then right before that, the Cleveland Browns, you know, they went to go to Baltimore. And then all of a sudden, the Cleveland Browns returned with an expansion team. So the NFL does seemingly have a history of resolving disputes, of replacing teams that have left with expansion teams. So why are we stuck at 32 teams? No one can really tell you, maybe because, and this is to Jim's point on our last podcast, which I think anybody can tell you with half a brain, right? These relocation fees are climbing up exponentially because there are no new teams popping up. But as Jim points out, which I think is probably true, if you had 40 NFL teams, I don't really think it would necessarily hurt the product. We have so many college quarterbacks graduating, they can't find a team. You have the XFL popping up. You have the CFL. You have leagues that seemingly have, you know, talented players. You have talented backups sitting on the bench. Jacoby Brissett fills in for Tua, you know, in Miami, does an admirable job. Seeming like there's enough talent to be put around. So the question is why, right? So if you have that conversation, right, and we're talking in a hypothetical world, Ben, and I'll turn it to you. The Rams get hit, and the NFL and all the 31 other NFL owners with a $10 billion judgment. And they take this thing up on appeal and they're arguing, hey, it wasn't so fair that we were in front of a St. Louis jury. Now, does the NFL want to just take that up on appeal and try to preserve this relocation clause and not put any type of settlement in? Or do they say, you know what? let's cut a check for $200 million, $300 million, and we'll give you a franchise. Ben, do you think that's at all realistic?
I think before we know if it's realistic, we would have to decide who is making those decisions for the league. Like, for example, I've heard people claim that Stan Kroenke is on the hook for the entire fallout from this lawsuit, but I don't know that that's the case. How are they going to split up who pays if they decide that the money is due? Who drives those discussions? Stan Kroenke's not going to move the Rams back here. He would rather, I think, give his team away for free before moving back to St. Louis. So I think that those decisions would have to be based off of who's making them. You know, so we believe that it has been reported that Kroenke has signed this indemnification agreement, which has him on the hook for some sort of this fallout from this case. Now, maybe it's just the legal fees, or maybe it's everything. I don't know. I can't. I think, and what I'm trying to say is the amount of infighting that could be happening within the league if this doesn't go their way versus the owners who are on the hook as defendants who had to hand over their financial information for punitives versus the owners who really were saying all along the way, hey, guys, hold on a second. I don't know that this is right. I don't know that we can just ram the Rams through to Los Angeles. Now, everybody kind of got on board at the end, but there were people of high import who were saying, this doesn't feel right. We're not following our own rules here. So to me, the idea of who makes that call and how do they all agree is a really thorny thing that I think is going to perhaps be more complicated than just, hey, give them a team. So I don't know. I mean, it could have happened, yes. And you're absolutely right, Dan. They have settled disagreements this way by planning an expansion team there in whatever city is scorned and the hard feelings go away. I wonder, you know, the key decision makers in this, if they feel like that's best. And I wonder if you took a vote of average St. Louisans, not just diehard football fans, and I know there are a lot of them, and they I have zero doubt that there would be an NFL team fully supported here. But I think there are a lot of people here who got that peek behind the curtain of how the league works and are kind of saying, forget these guys. We don't want their team. We don't want to be on the hook with them anymore. We want them to pay for what they did wrong. We want them to be held accountable for their lies. We want other regions not to have to go through this. And they've got a MLS expansion soccer team now, and they want to move on that way. Not everybody, but I know there are some who feel that way.
We're sitting here. It's late September. The trial's due to begin January 10th. What still has to take place between now and the beginning of the trial? Have witness lists been circulated? Are there going to be any in-court proceedings, jury instructions? What have you heard about the next steps in the courthouse prior to actually taking this to a trial? Because normally you would expect the pretrial preparation to really begin right about now.
Yeah. So they've got to build a jury. And of course, that's going to be a huge, huge disagreement, as Dan touched on. Like, they're going to fight about every juror probably to try to get ones who are not, you know, biased in favor of the region on this issue. So that will be a task that is off the ground. And the other parallel track that we really know about is this fight over the financial information. The Rams and the NFL appealed all the way to the Missouri Supreme Court to not have to hand over very detailed financial documents for Stan Kroenke and the other four owners who are part of the Los Angeles Committee on Opportunities. That includes Robert Kraft. It includes Jerry Jones, Clark Hunt, John Merritt, those guys. They have to hand over some really heavy financial tax documents, tax returns going back like 3 years, a list of all their businesses. The Missouri Supreme Court said, yeah, you've got to hand that over. It hasn't, to my knowledge, been handed over yet. A fine, I think, of like $1,000 per day per defendant will start sometime this week, which just basically becomes like a running meter on the case. For these guys, it's not exactly big money, but it would be ignoring a judge's request. So how that pans out is going to be interesting if there's more fighting about that, if they try to take that to like a federal level. The one time they went to the U.S. Supreme Court about something in this case was the fight about the arbitration, which the U.S. Supreme Court didn't touch it and they lost. So that's playing out on another level too. And then any whispers of course, settlement discussions, to which as of now, I don't think there have been many, if any at all. Those are the three kind of big things as we get near the trial in January.
Oh, listen, we're trying to get you out of here right on the
nose. No, you guys are great. I appreciate you guys getting folks informed about it. You know, It's good to have different levels of like abstraction, and it's good that you guys are bouncing around talking to all different kinds of people about it. And, you know, I'm oftentimes feel like I'm so in the weeds, and you guys are doing a great job. I'm learning a lot from listening to the conversations you guys are having. So keep up the good work, and thanks for letting me be a small part of it.
Of course, Ben. Listen, our pleasure, to the extent this case keeps trucking along. We have a January 2022 trial date, so I anticipate that we're going to be reaching out to you again in the next couple of weeks.
Dan, we're going to be there. We're going to be in St.
Yeah,
Louis.
Come on. Gonna, you can.
We're going to bring the truck.
You get a flight from Russia. I got a place you could crash at. I will say this, though, for folks who are following this, we try to, you know, really keep it covered every inch of it. In a normal trial like this, like, we don't write, you know, big, long stories about every proceeding, right? You kind of let them play out. But we know this is of interest to readers. So Joel Currier of the Post-Dispatch has done a great job on the news side. I take more of an opinion stance. But if folks are interested in this, they can check out all of the coverage dating back to the initial filing of the lawsuit. I mean, we have the initial PDF of this lawsuit when it was first filed years ago at stltoday.com.
Ben, our pleasure having you on. Stay tuned for more on this one.
Okay, guys. Sounds good. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you so much, Ben. We appreciate it.
Dan, I have to say, I think we're batting 1,000 on these guests. We are 3 for 3, 3 perfect guests for this topic. Ben Fredrickson obviously delivered. He was recommended by a lot of our listeners, and a lot of our new listeners from St. Louis said that Ben is the guy to go to for this. You know, obviously a number of takeaways here. I think the one that stood out to me, which I've my thoughts when we spoke to Ben Fisher. I think this question as to whether or not the relocation policy is a contract is so critical here. And it's the same reason why St. Louis feels so scorned by this interaction, right? Why did we jump through all these hoops? Why did we have these town halls if it didn't matter? Jerry Jones doesn't take the time to read it, as according to, it's Ben Fredrickson's, how he explains the testimony. Jerry Jones doesn't care to read it. You know, maybe that's evidence that says Jerry Jones always thought all along this was not binding. But the question is not whether Jerry Jones thinks it's binding. It's whether or not these home markets, be it St. Louis, be it San Diego, be it Jacksonville, be it Buffalo, be it Minnesota, that these were intended third-party beneficiaries, or if these guidelines were just created to help save the NFL from itself. The problem, Dan, if we're kind of combining our last two interviews, as Jim Quinn kind of eloquently laid out on our last episode, NFL owners don't gain anything financially if a team stays in St. Louis, if a team stays in Oakland. What they do gain from, automatically, immediately, if a team moves to a new market, there is a relocation fee, or an expansion fee that's paid, and that's money in hand immediately. So maybe the relocation policy is not a binding contract, something should be put in place to protect these markets. My opinion, Dan, and you know me, I think this was put in place to protect these home markets. I know the NFL wants to have some revisionist history, but that's just my take on it.
Well, I agree with you, Dan. I think the devil is in the details. You ever hear the expression, hoisted by your own petard? By the way, before I went to law school, I don't think I ever used, no one uses that expression unless they went to law school and are practicing lawyers.
Never used that expression. I've never heard of that expression.
Well, you should. Well, next time you write a brief in a breach of contract case and the other side includes language that is detrimental to its position, you could say that they were hoisted by their own petard. And right there in the NFL relocation policy, it says right at the outset that the primary obligation to the league is to advance the interests of the league in its home territory. And it includes maximizing fan support. And most importantly, this is sort of the 10 commandments of the NFL's relocation policy. It says that there is no club has an entitlement to relocate simply because it perceives an opportunity for enhanced club revenues in another location. But that's exactly why, Mark Davis moved the Raiders from Oakland to Las Vegas. And that certainly underlies why Stan Kroenke moved the Rams out of St. Louis into Los Angeles. It became a revenue play, and that the league is merely paying lip service to its own guidelines. And moreover, these are the primary guiding principles at the top of the guidelines that said appear to be just, given almost no weight or credence by the league. They're finding a way to decide, one, the relocation policy isn't binding upon us, and then trying to convince a jury that in the face of all these references to home territory and the league's primary obligation, that they still believed that the decision to relocate complied with this policy. So they're going to face an uphill battle in front of a St. Louis jury and maybe potentially in front of an Oakland jury in another year or two. So this debate could become a sort of a roving relocation dispute as future teams decide to maybe leave for greener pastures and attempt to justify their relocation under existing guidelines when the facts fly in the face of what they're trying to do.
Yeah. So, for the big takeaway, people want to realize, what the big thing here and maybe combining our last two episodes, because we're trying to hit this a lot. Dan has mentioned, this is Dan's prediction. Dan is a sports betting guru, and he's also an appellate lawyer, and, you know, spent decades as an appellate lawyer. Right now, this Oakland Raiders case is up on appeal, and you can take, you don't have to take Jim Quinn's word for it. He's obviously a biased party. But Dan, as you mentioned, you've watched the oral argument. You think there's a good chance that this case, the Oakland case, could be restored. So this narrative that's been painted in sports law, and I guess in the national media, whoever's talking about this case, yeah, this Rams case is going to be dismissed just like the Oakland case. The Oakland case was built on antitrust grounds. And we talked to Ben after the podcast stopped rolling. You know, there was a decision that was made behind the scenes to not make this case an antitrust case. But if the Oakland case is restored, all of a sudden the tables have kind of turned. So I don't know. All in all, this is such a tremendous fact pattern for lawyers, for those that are not interested in law. Dan, we're seeing it in the numbers of the podcast. People are interested in all the crazy facets of this lawsuit. I had a conversation, Dan, not to mention Themis again, but, you know, we'll mention Themis again. I said you should put this as a, you know, as a hypothetical essay writing, a, you know, question for these law students. You should give this as it talks a little bit, you know, about breach of contract, unjust enrichment, antitrust. It's a fantastic law school fact pattern.
Great way to teach damages and, fantastic. You know, the damages that are
choice of venue, discovery. It's got everything.
Yep. Arbitration provisions. In a way, it parallels
the. It's got leases in there. It's got everything.
It parallels the Deflategate in all the areas of law, the different areas of law that this dispute touches. But at the end of the day, the NFL is like almost like an insurance company. They try to sort of get away or get cases dismissed on technicalities and deny, and frustrate the attempts of plaintiffs to get in front of a jury when in most of these instances, the merits and the equities lie with the plaintiff's position. As long as you have the sort of the stamina to withstand all these procedural battlegrounds, and St. Louis is standing. We're here at the end of September. They've survived all these gauntlets, motions to compel arbitration, motions to dismiss, motions for summary judgment, two intermediate state court appeals, one U.S. Supreme Court appeal, and who knows what other Hail Marys lie in the way of St. Louis getting to a jury trial. But they're almost there. They're standing. And more often than not, when the NFL goes to trial in front of a jury, they lose. And that's the sort of the payday or the reward for St. Louis making it this far into the process. They'll either be in front of a favorable jury or they're going to be positioned for a highly favorable monetary settlement.
Dan, I'm with you. This case has so many fascinating portions of it. Again, you don't have to be from St. Louis to understand this. And I think those who have listened to this podcast, now our third installment, can understand why this case has so many interesting levels to it. Dan, anything else to add before we put this in the books?
Yeah. One other thing. You mentioned that we've had three great guests so far. We're batting 1,000. I want to qualify for the batting title. You need plate appearances on this issue. And there is an endless, really, group of amazing experts and thought leaders that we can kind of bring in and discuss the different elements of this case with. If it does go, in fact, all the way to a trial, I want to bring aboard Randy Carricker from St. Louis. We could talk to Andrew Brandt on the business side of things. I don't want to tease
have my people. Friend Bernie Mikulas over in St. Louis as well. Big sports.
Sure. Yeah, I have a feeling that we're going to get close to double digits in talking about this issue in terms of future episodes, because there will be new issues that come to the fore. And as we get closer to the trial and this thing becomes, you know, like a real clear and present situation, then we're going to be getting into the trial proceedings. And I look forward to really hitting this topic at least a few more times between now and the end of the year.
So that'll do it for us over here. As always, I am on social media, Dan Lust at Sports Law Lust. Dan Wallach is at Wallach Legal. The show is at Con Detrimental. We do have our website, condictdetrimental.com, where, again, there's a call to arms to write about this lawsuit. We are down to have. You don't have to be a lawyer to write about sports law. And we mentioned Themis a bunch of times on this podcast. To the extent you want to learn more about Themis, go to themisbar.com/condetrimental, and you will learn all about why we keep talking about Themis on this podcast. Dan and myself, we will see you next week on another episode of Conic Detrimental.